To another episode of Tabletop Crowd. I'm your host, Kristen. Tonight, I am here with the two wonderful co-designers behind Suburban Consumption of the Monstrous, an anthology of horror live action RPGs that are set in suburbia with themes of food and consumption. So I'm going to have you both introduce yourself before we jump into the project. Banana, can we start with you?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again for having me on. I'm Banana. I am the owner and co-founder of a board game / RPG publishing company called Game in a Curry. I also design games. So I design RPGs, LARPs, and a little bit of board game stuff too. So that's me.
Hi, I'm Sadia. I am primarily a LARP designer, and I'm also an illustrator for a number of tabletop RPGs. I also am a co-owner and founder of Ratworm Games, which we ran some large-scale live-action events, and right now we are working on an indie video game.
Ooh, that sounds exciting. Okay, I'm going to stay on track, but we might have to come back to that at some point, Sadia.
Okay.
So, Banana, would you mind starting by telling us a little bit about what this project is?
Yeah, absolutely. So this project is Suburban Consumption of the Monstrous, which is it's an anthology of 14 American freeform LARPs. And what American freeform LARPs are basically they are shorter games that are not as dependent on costuming or props or anything like that. So that's what separates them from boffer LARPs or campaign LARPs or anything like that. So this collection is all horror-based and they're all set around a dinner table or a suburban environment.
And how did you two start working together on this project?
So I had worked with Banana a little bit before. I was an illustrator for Jiangxi. Yeah, we had worked a little bit together on that. We knew that each other were both like interested in horror. So she reached out to me and just kind of like had this concept and I was on board very quickly. It was like, oh yeah, this seems perfect. I'm very excited about it.
And how long have you all been working on this project? I'm always curious because I feel like it varies greatly. Some people are like a month and some are like 2 years.
I think we settled on 8 months. Is that like?
Yeah, I think we started around January of this year. And most of the project work up until this point has been really finalizing the game text. So writing the 14 games, getting them play tested and editing them.
Were all 14 games play tested, or did you find that only some needed to be play tested?
Yeah, I would say all of them are play tested. The solo games luckily are a little bit easier to play test. So just because, you know, we were in lockdown for quite some time and the solo games were a little easier to play test. The two-player games, even the three-player games, I would say were like easier to play test. It's just that when it got to like the four player or the, you know, the other section where we have, you know, a higher player count, that got a little trickier. Mm-hmm. But luckily we found ways around it.
I think at first we were like, I'm not sure all of these games need to be play tested, but then it ended up being like not too bad to get it done. And then also it did end up being, pretty useful even for the games that only needed like very minor changes.
So I heard you mention solo, two player, and three player. What does that look like? So I guess I know they're solo, so just one player, but what is the, how many players are involved in all the other different games?
So we actually have the book divided up into sections by player count.
Okay.
So we have a solo section, a two-player section, three-player section, four-player section, and a section that's for more, that's more of like a dinner party vibe. So yeah, most of the games are pretty dependent on their player count. Like they need, especially when you only have two or three players, like you really need that exact number of players for the game to function. But with the way the book's laid out, if you have three people, you can be like, let's see which one of the games in this section works for us tonight.
How was it play testing virtually? And did you only play test virtually all of these different games?
So we did not. We play tested them in person. So luckily a couple of them had been, so like the ones that were solo games, like we had sent them out to different people to play test so that we didn't have to do our own play testing, because then that would be like a little bit strange for us to like do our own play testing on a solo game. Mostly because it's just like, oh, we've already read the stuff, we already know what to expect. So we sent those out. Same with a couple of the two-player ones, I believe. I think the three-player ones as well. They had some, we sent them out to like people who were living with other people. And so that's how we managed playtesting. And then later on down the line, when we had a little bit more flexibility, when things started opening up a little bit more, we were inviting people to play test with us. So we would do the larger player count games, like the four player or the 5 to 7 player count games. Mm-hmm. We had those at our homes, and you know, obviously making sure that everyone was vaccinated and like, you know, healthy and everything.
Right. Is this, I may totally take this out, Banana, but is this one of the games that I saw you post a picture of on Twitter where everyone's in white with like flower? It was a cult yep. game.
It is? Okay. Yep.
I thought that was a completely different game. I was like, Banana is so busy.
It was one of the 14 games, yes.
Yeah, that is actually also like part of the game, because that game involves like a cult recruitment video. So you play that video with all the people in white and flower crowns like mid game.
So I know we don't want to talk about all 14 games, but can we talk about a few of the games, maybe your favorites or maybe the ones that are most challenging to design, both, whatever you'd like to share. I'm really excited to hear this.
I have a couple favorites. I feel like also my favorites kind of like switch depending on like what I've been working on most recently, or, you know, the last game I finished was My Love, a Poison, which is a two-player game about basically like a romantic couple that is in like a Munchausen's by proxy situation. So it is about one lover who spends a lot of time at home and is very jealous of like the other lover's like expansive life outside the home, poisoning that person and then like tenderly taking care of them. Like they feed them, they bathe them, and they tuck them into bed. Yeah, I feel really excited about that game, mostly because like I knew I wanted to do that concept since the beginning, but it took me until the very end for like the pieces to fall into place. So it was like very satisfying when they did. And like the last thing I needed to design it was like really thinking about the person who's being poisoned and like what their experience in the game would be. And for me, it became really about what kinds of affection or care are really hard to accept. Kind of like them being able to accept this kind of care only when they're being like actively poisoned.
If you want to share, what about the one that maybe was the most challenging to write or design?
I would say probably the ones that required a larger player count, mm-hmm. Just because those were harder to So we have four of them that are under the four more category. So four more basically means anywhere between, I want to say like six players to eight players, somewhere around there, mm-hmm. or four players to eight players. So that's how many players that we would have, maximum. Eight would always be the max for all of these games. And I think just trying to scale it was a little tricky just because, like, you know, are we going to be able to have the same experience as what we're expecting, that kind of thing. But then, like, you know, obviously after playtesting, it's just like, okay, so some of these parts like actually make sense. We just have to make sure it's scalable with like a larger player count.
Right. That makes sense. And you did it all during quarantine. And so doing that play test at the end, right, is tricky too. But Anna, I asked you the challenging question. Did you have one that was your favorite to write or co-write?
Oh gosh. I think like, so I do really like the Eve of Y2K. That one was the one that I wrote about, that we wrote about, just basically like the end of the world. So it's like a Y2K dinner party. And it's like New Year's Eve and you're all playing terrible people and you have to like hang out with one another. And then at the very end, the world might or might not end. And it's like, it plays at like a regular dinner party or a New Year's Eve party, except that there is a video of the ball drop playing in the background. And it's like the millennium ball drop from the actual, from Y2K. So you have that playing in the background and it's like super weird and like kind of creepy just because like a lot of the people that are being interviewed on the show, like the millennium ball drop show, they're people like Jeff Bezos. And it's like, people are not taking them seriously. They're just like, oh yeah, okay. Next millionaire doing some weird, you know, next billionaire doing some weird quirky thing, like, you know, that kind of thing. And like, just seeing it in like a meta sense is like very strange. And then like slowly having to make toasts. And every time you make a toast, like you see something, you have to like grab a prompt card that basically tells you like in a parallel universe, you see this thing happening. And then over time, it just gets like more and more like creepy and weird.
Most of the guests we've had on, we've talked about projects that are either like podcasts for actual plays or audio dramas, or I guess for lack of a better, standard tabletop role-playing games. I haven't talked to a lot of folks about LARPs. So, and just another reason of the long list of reasons I'm excited you're both here. So can we talk a little bit about what character creation might look like if that's a thing with LARPs and what that looks like in maybe not even in comparison, what does it look like for your project?
I think that at least for the type of LARP we're doing, and I think this is pretty true almost across the board for American Freeform, most of character creation is answering a series of like questions or prompts given to you by the designer. So there aren't a lot of things that require like stats, which isn't true for Boffer LARP. Boffer LARP, I would say character creation is pretty similar to tabletop, where you might be doing point buy for abilities or things like that. But since games like this are so focused on like social interaction and social dynamics, and you're pretty much only doing things that you can like actually physically do with your body, character creation is more about guiding you to make a fully developed character that you're going to have fun role playing in the scene. And it can also really help guide the tone of play. Like if you have a question in character development that's like, what's something your character regrets? That kind of like, it means that they're like, oh, this is something that might come up over the course of play. And it can be a really good tool to kind of like calibrate players as well.
So are there relationship questions with each game?
Yeah, I would say for most of the games, yeah, there are also questions that are answered together as a group or questions about like what you might think of other characters. We also do have a couple games for, I think, just our larger player count games that have some pre-made characters. Which still like needs some development and to be like really fully, to be like fully embodied. I think they are, but they're like starting points. So you have some like starting relationships, like, you know, you're that character's ex and you know that you're that character's best friend. And that can be also a really good jumping off point.
As you both were sharing so much great information, I heard that there are prompt cards and I heard that there was a video. So can we talk a little bit about what, I guess, like what comes with the game? Like, are the prompt cards and videos included, or are folks just going to like, you know, Google that video on YouTube? How does that work?
So the games that we were discussing earlier that have like prompt cards and videos and all that kind of stuff, they are included in the game or in the book itself. So we have QR codes that you can just like scan with your phone and then you could play the video. With the prompt cards and everything, those are also in the book itself. So you can just like basically like, you know, copy it and cut them out yourself. But in the Kickstarter itself, if we manage to reach a certain goal, we might be able to get those cards physically printed onto like actual separate cards. So we can have that as like a pack for our customers and backers. There are also a few other media things that we wanted to have and to create, such as like MP3 files or additional video assets that we'd also like to make. So if we hit another stretch goal, then we'd be able to make those and integrate those into the game.
Nice.
Yeah, it's been really awesome working with Banana just because they have so much like video editing prowess. And it's been really cool to like be able to add that like multimedia aspect to the games.
Yeah. So I want to kind of go back because I skipped over something I wanted to ask you in the beginning, which is, so Sadia, I know that you said you approached, no, Banana, did you approach Sadia with the idea? Okay. Yeah. What inspired this idea?
I think movies. So like, I felt, I had the understanding based off of, I think Sadia's just like Twitter account that they really like the same movies and same media that I do. So I was just like, hey, want to do a book of LARPs and just do a thing together? That's what it looks like on my end.
I also feel like the beginning of the process was a lot of us being like, hey, have you seen this horror movie? Just back and forth. And just being like sharing like a lot of like media inspirations. And then like, I feel like the idea kind of like got more specific and coalesced as we like picked out like specific themes we really liked from like basically house horror movies, like horror movies that are set in the home.
Will folks that are playing these games need any sort of props? So I know like the 4 to 8 player LARPs is like a dinner party vibe, and it sounds like a lot is included, but are there any like props or costumes that are needed or encouraged for some of these games?
Totally. There are some games that do require props. We try to keep the requirements like pretty minimal so that you're not doing a ton of prep. But like there's a game that requires a butter knife, and there's a game that requires a bell. And there's a game that requires like a weird like flavor extract. That's actually like a poisoning mechanic. So it's like if you taste something strong and weird in your food, that is a poison. Most of the games don't require a ton of like specific hard to get props, but some of them do have some prop requirements. I'm a costumer. I feel like costumes are always encouraged. I don't think there are any games that like you can't play in plain clothes. I guess for me, it feels like the biggest like setup requirement is actually like making dinner. Mm-hmm. What you have to do for a bunch of the games. It's like, well, this game takes place at dinner, so there needs to be a dinner here. But you know, there's always takeout if you're not great at cooking.
I hope that suggestion is in the book.
Yeah, I think one of the games. Takeout. Yeah, one of the games requires takeout.
Me and Banana are both pretty bad at cooking, so the fact that we've made a ton of dinner games is very funny.
Yep. Really ironic, honestly.
Yes, which I've been so focused on the horror aspect because it's so interesting that I haven't yet touched on the food. So what the heck? Why food? And I mean that in the best way possible. Yeah. Why food with horror games? Where, how did the food theme come into play?
I think we're interested in mostly like awkward family dynamics. So that was like one of the driving forces behind this theme. So having to have dinner with, you know, relatives that you probably don't really like, and having like awkward silences, like that kind of thing. It's just, you know, such an anxiety ridden environment that we wanted to have that sort of come up.
Yeah, I also think there's just kind of like the traditional like media analysis thing of like when you're eating, when you're showing eating in a book or in a movie, like it's never actually about the food. It's always about something else. And I feel like food is, and like hunger is a really interesting thing to use as a metaphor for all kinds of things in horror, specifically desires that you shouldn't have, or, you know, like monstrous aspects of yourself.
So knowing both of you a little bit, I know that's, safety is obviously very important. So I'm wondering if we could just touch on, since we are dealing with a lot of horror themes, family themes, possibly, what kind of safety tools are involved and like, how did you go about incorporating them?
Yeah. So we have a whole section in the beginning of the book that just outlines a bunch of safety mechanics. And it details all of the different ones that would appear in some of these games. So each of these games, because they're so different, we've included all the actual tools and the calibration tools in the very beginning, so that later on, when you're reading the book, when you're reading the games, you'll see that some of them have suggested tools, and it would just be a list of like suggested tools based on what we have in the beginning. Obviously, these are just like, you know, tools that we've provided, but, you know, if players want to use their own tools, or if they want to, you know, mess around with the tools that we have so far in the game, or in the book, then, you know, they can definitely do so as well.
It's kind of designed so that like, you can choose which ones you think will work best for your player group. Just because like, I've had very varying results with different like calibration tools, just depending on who's using them and the comfort level with like the types of communication. And I think like the biggest thing you can do to play these games safely is to play them with people that you're really comfortable with. Like whenever a game is going to be about something really intense, like you need to have the comfort level to be able to like openly talk about those things with the people you're playing with. So that's always like my kind of biggest safety recommendation.
So Sadia, knowing that you're an illustrator, is there art included in this game? And are you the illustrator of this game?
Yes, there is art included in this game. Our goal is to have 14 full page illustrations. So at least one full page illustration per game. I am doing some of those illustrations, but we also have a really awesome team of artists that I've been in touch with. There are a bunch of them, so I can't name drop all of them right now, but I'm really excited. Like Jabari Weathers is going to be working with us, and Trevor Henderson and Koi Kuhn. So like, I don't know, a bunch of artists whose work I really love, and I'm very excited to work with them.
And then now I'm going to derail us a little bit, but sticking with art, did you say you worked on Jiangxi on the art for that?
Yeah, I did some of the nightmare card art.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I just love that game and I love all the art associated with that game. And so I was wondering which pieces you did.
Yeah, it was a really fun project, mostly because I sent all the initial sketches to Banana, and I kept being like, let me know if this is like too much. Like, they're very, very body horror. And Banana was like, no, that's great. That's great. Like, some little people re like ripping teeth out of a mouth. That seems good.
Into it.
Yeah. I think it was like the only time I've been art directed and like in a horror way and not been told to like bring back the body horror a little
Banana's like, can I get more teeth, please? I'm gonna
bit.
need 10 more teeth in this photo or this
To be
picture.
fair, I got the okay from everyone else as well, so it wasn't just me.
Oh, there we go.
I want to talk about our child because that experience was like, what the fuck? I mean, sorry, I'm
Oh,
cursing,
you can.
but
You
like,
can.
okay. That was like, holy shit, this is so much fun. Like, for me, I was like a
Yeah.
creep in that game.
Can you share that
Yeah.
experience or is it not something you want on recording?
Oh, yeah. I would love to
Okay.
share it. One of the games, Our Child, it's a three-player game, and I had the privilege of play testing it. And so basically, there are three players. Two of them are the parents who are trying to create or try to create a, like a child, right? But the child is made out of magic and like is really weird and just like not very human. So I was playing the child, and every night, there is like a set schedule that these parents have to go through. And so in the game, you have a list of things that you have to do, like basically an itinerary. So you have to make tea for the child. You have to tuck the child into bed, tell them like a bedtime story, that kind of thing. And I got to be very creepy and like really weird. And the responsibilities of the child player are that you have to, ask for things in the third person. So I would be like, I don't know, like child wants this or child wants that. And the things that you have to ask for are like weird things, right? So I asked for a knife before bedtime. And I also asked for like, I think it was like a lock of hair for my mother. Just like, very normal things.
Completely
But
normal.
like, yeah, like that game was so much fun to play test. And I just had like a blast with that.
So, how long does it take to play that game specifically? Or is it up to the players, or is there like a, I guess, like a natural completion of that game?
It's sort of up to the players. And there is like a little bit of both, right? So it's up to the players, and then there is also that natural phase of completion where it's just like, okay, we're done. Like both of them do sort of come into play. For us, I think it took about, I want to say like an hour and 20 minutes or hour and 30 minutes, including character creation, and just like going through all the prompts and everything.
A lot of our games have like an ending mechanic to kind of like wrap up the game and give it like a sense of closure. But like usually when that ending mechanic comes into play is kind of decided by the players. So for our child, the ending mechanic is like after you've put the child be to bed, you like shut them in and lock the door. That's how you know the game is over, and then you can come together and like discuss what happens afterwards.
So I have two kids. I have a 3-year-old and an 8-year-old. And ever since my 8-year-old could get out of his own bed, I have locked my bedroom door, which I'm sure makes me a terrible mother. But my biggest fear in life is waking up to a creepy child, which every child is creepy coming from a mother. Every child is creepy at 3 a.m. My biggest fear is waking up to a child just staring at me in the middle of the night. So when you said locking a child in their room, I'm like, or I could have gone that route, I suppose. I love that they all have an ending mechanic, though, and that it's that the players have some say, right? Because I think that goes back to a little bit of like comfort and safety that they know they can end the game, and you've built that in. It's not just, okay, I'm done, but there's actually like more of a mechanic that's built in to help ease you out of that process. I love that.
Yeah, I think it's really important because otherwise, like, there's this sense that you kind of just like trail off, like you just keep playing until you're all bored, which ending a game on the note of like, well, we're all bored now is never super fun. So I really love ending mechanics. I especially love ending on like a high intensity note. I mean, it's a horror game, so a lot of these games do end with like death. you know,
yeah,
a traditional horror ending.
Right. Yeah. They're horror games. That makes complete sense.
Yeah. But yeah, not all of them. Some of them, like Our Child, is like you lock the child in and it's like the spell refreshes and is completed again. And that's the ending of that game. It's like, it does like vary a lot how yeah. the ending mechanic works.
Nice. Sadia, if you have time and would like to, I'd love to hear about another one of the games. There's so many. I am liking everything I hear so far.
Yeah. I would love to talk about one of the ones I play tested, which is Clarity Comes to Dinner, which is the game with the cult initiation video. I had so much fun playing that game. And it was also really great because two of my friends who I got to help play test it were both first-time LARPers. They were both like people who had played a lot of tabletop before, but like had never done live action. And it was like, in my opinion, a really great game to bring them into that experience. There's like some basic like pre-made characters, but then like you spend some time like building them up. And you're like playing like a college friend group with like some kind of horrible secret. And one of the characters has had left suddenly, gone no contact, and then come back years later after joining this cult and is basically like, everything's fine and normal. How are you, my college buddies? Do you want to join the cult I'm in?
Like you do.
So it's a really fun premise for an incredibly awkward dinner party. And I think one of the strengths of the game is like that awkwardness happens both in character and out of character. Like there's this kind of awkwardness of like, oh, we're all just standing around here being our characters right now. And then there's this awkwardness of like, we've had like this long social separation, all these horrible things have happened that we're not talking about. And there's like a really nice building of tension around that. And every time someone can't think of something to say, like you feel it in that game. It is intense. And it also has a mechanic where it's called the Love and Peace card. And it's basically something that gets passed around to like kind of push back whenever someone's being like really critical or really doubtful of something that's going on. So it's kind of like a representation of this like cult mentality. And at least with my player group, it became almost like confrontational when you would pass off this card. It was like a gotcha, like, oh, you're questioning what's going on right now? Take that, which included in the final scene where you kind of like choose whether or not to drink the Kool-Aid type deal. Someone was like, I was like making a toast and the character who's playing, the player who's playing my ex-husband was starting to interrupt the toast and be like, hey, I don't think this is right. And like someone just like immediately slipped him the card. And he was like, and I'll toast to that. And we all drank, which was a really incredible moment.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I didn't even ask about Our Child either, but is food involved in this one, in the cult one?
Yeah. So the cult one is like at a dinner party. So part okay. of it is you sit down to dinner and then at the climax of the dinner, there's like a drink that is poisoned that is given to everyone. With Our Child, I'd say like the food is a little less
like a little snack.
Yeah, you give the child like a before bed snack.
Okay. Yeah. Also accurate. Oh, well, thank you so much for sharing a little bit more about those games, because I'm really excited to play all of them. And I thought maybe the Y2K was going to be my favorite, but now I don't know. Now I'm going to have to play all of them and find out, because those both sound wonderful as well. Before we plug any other projects and say goodbye, I would love to hear about anything you can share about the Kickstarter itself, like maybe when it goes live, if you have a date, who the publisher is. You don't have to spill any secrets, just anything you can tell our audience about the Kickstarter.
Yeah, so the Kickstarter is going live on October 19th, which I believe is a Tuesday. And that is a few days from now. That's 14 days from now. But This episode is going live on the 20-somethingth, right?
Yes.
Okay, ignore what I just said. This Kickstarter will go live October 19th, and it's going to be a 30-day campaign. It is being published by Palgrin Press. We had the pleasure of working with Kat Tobin on this, and we're also working with Ruby on the graphic design stuff. So she's been amazing, just like getting all the rewards stuff and like, sorry, not all the reward stuff, the banner stuff ready for us.
Yeah, she also already did some like lovely design on the cover for us, and the free play kit that's available is all laid out by Ruby, so that you, Ruby Lavin, so you have like an idea of what the final book is likely to look like.
And I know we heard about some of the stretch goals, and I won't ask you for more because those are often secret. However, will there be a physical book and a PDF, or just one or the other?
There will definitely be both. At our funding goal, we have a soft cover physical book and the PDF. You can purchase just the PDF, and if you purchase the book, you automatically also get the PDF.
And I think we could talk about three of the cool physical rewards that we're offering.
Oh, yay, please tell us.
Oh, yeah, totally. So we're offering some physical rewards that can be used as props in the games. One of them is like a poison vial necklace. So you can put your own like little extract in there if you want. We're also offering a custom like flatware set. So, you know, just a fork and a knife and a spoon that all have like a little tooth engraved on them. At our like really, really high reward tier, I'm doing some custom haunted house models. So I'm going to get a 3D printed like Victorian house and like custom paint it and add some like spooky sculpted details, and also like write like a little short like card that comes with it describing like why this house is haunted, like the particular way that it became haunted.
Is it weird that I want the flatware with the tooth engraved on it? Oh,
it is a very good reward.
It sounds like it. And Banana, I did see some paintings from you on Twitter. Are those for this game too, or can we not talk about this?
They are for this Kickstarter. Okay. I'll be painting 5 fruit with teeth paintings. And so you have a choice of apples, dragon fruit. I'm trying to think of like what else right now. I think it's like pears is the other one. But yeah, it's just like random fruit with teeth.
I would have loved to have been part of that meeting where y'all came up with this. What else can we do? I mean, I can paint some fruit with teeth if I have to.
I think the description also was at first Banana was like, I could paint some rotting fruit. And I was like, that sounds awesome. And then we see the final piece, and it is a fruit full of teeth. And I was like, you know, that's even better.
Right?
I figure we might as well be on brand, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I feel like teeth are a theme in this project.
Yeah, I love drawing teeth, and also you know, what else are you going to eat with, really? So, oh, the other thing, I guess, is that we're really, really hoping to reach like our first major stretch goal, which is to upgrade the book to a hardcover.
Oh.
with a translucent vellum dust jacket.
Mm-hmm. It looks amazing.
I'm really excited about this dust jacket because it's like I'm doing more art on the dust jacket, but since it's translucent, it like overlays the existing cover and it creates like a really cool effect where it's like, I don't know, turning the original piece into a new one instead of just an entirely separate piece of art on the dust jacket.
Sadia's awesome. Illustrations look really creepy and cool. Like they are just, it's really cool.
And that's at the first stretch goal, right?
Yeah, that one is an early on stretch
goal. Well, we want you to hit all of them, but I was just checking to see if that was my stretch goal.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I want to hit all of them too, but that's one of the ones that I'm like very, very excited about.
Well, thank you both so much for joining me to discuss suburban consumption of the monstrous. Before we close out, I'd love for you to both tell folks where they can find you if you want to be found on the internet. And if you want to take a couple minutes to talk about any other projects you have, please feel free to do that as well. Sadia, we can start with you.
Yeah, totally. You can find me on Twitter at Sadia Bees. That is SadiaBies. And you can find my other LARPs on my Itch storefront at Witch Stitches. You also, if you're interested in checking out a sci-fi visual novel, pre-orders are open for The Sky Left Us. You can find that at ratwormgames.com, or you can find that Twitter at The Sky Left.
Cool. Thanks for having us. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Banana Chan Games. And you can find my company on the website www.gameinacurry.com. The next thing I'm working on, actually, I have another Kickstarter that's parallel to this, which is Exquisite Crime that I'm working on with San Fon Lim. And that is basically a game about being psychics trying to solve murders and crimes while creating those crimes by drawing out exquisite corpses.
So for our listeners, Suburban Consumption of the Monstrous is very likely live on Kickstarter at the time that you are listening to this. So please check our show notes, both for the link to that Kickstarter and for the Twitter and social media handles for both of these amazing designers. If you cannot back the game, understandable, please share with all of your friends, all of your family, anyone who likes horror, because this is a fantastic project and we want all of those stretch goals met. Thank you. Here. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Tabletop Crowd. We also have Tabletop Babble and Tabletop Spotlight episodes that you can check out. And if you're enjoying our content, please give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, as it really does help our show reach more listeners. For show updates and announcements, you can follow us on Twitter at Tabletop Babble. We will see you next week for an interview with two designers who created a game called Women Are Werewolves. Thanks for listening. Bye!